right, we are live. Welcome to episode 3 of The Art of Commercial Real Estate, sponsored to you by First National Realty Partners. I'm Vice President Dan Solanas. I'm joined today by co-founders Anthony Grasso and Chris Palermo. Guys, how we doing?
Dan, how are you?
Dan, how are you?
Awesome. I'm excited about this episode. We got a lot of good stuff to cover. And again, we hope you learn a lot, take a lot from this. We're going to cover a lot today, so make sure you're paying attention. And in today's episode, what we want to talk about is why real estate is really a full-time job. And Tony, to that note, I want to start with you because I think a lot of guys, when they look at real estate, some of them think it's a business, some of them think it's an investment. What is your stance on that? What is investing in real estate?
I think guys that have been in the business understand it is a business. You're not really just investing passively and sitting back. And I think the asset class and ultimately what goes into each deal or asset does kind of determine how full-time and hands-on you have to be. But real estate 100% is a business. It is not an investment. It's not something you can just put capital to work and sit back unless you're working with a sponsor or, you know, a firm that obviously does that for you. Even when you hire a property management company, you're still managing the manager. There's a lot that goes into it. So I don't think that real estate at all should be looked at as just a passive investment class. You need to look at it for what it is. And there's a lot that goes into it, from acquisition to management to leasing all the way through to disposition. It's a full-time endeavor.
Yeah, so a lot of moving parts, basically.
Absolutely.
Right? A lot of people involved, a lot to it. It's not just a set it and forget it type thing. Chris, what would you have to add to that? I mean, do you have the same opinion?
Yeah, I mean, look, when you're working with anything that produces income and you're dealing with, let's say, a customer, which this end user would be a tenant, you'll always have issues. Whether it's, you know, an apartment building where you have either two tenants fighting or a toilet clogs or, you know, a heater blows. With real estate, you'll always have issues, and you have, you know, the guys who can address the issues and work through any problems. It's, you know, it makes things a lot easier.
Yeah, and I think there's a huge misconception from guys that are doing their first deal or buying their first asset that they're going to buy an asset, they're going to sit there, and then rents are going to go into their mailbox or their bank account. And it's just not what goes on. Even when you're using a third-party manager, there's a lot that goes into it. So you see that from a lot of novice guys stepping into the business. They're just going to buy, they're going to get their check, and then they're going to do a bunch of deals and just sit back when, you know, it really takes a village. It takes an entire staff of people to do it, you know, to run a portfolio correctly.
Let me ask you something. So from a novice standpoint, right, what kind of mistakes do you typically see first-time real estate owners make not realizing the management intensiveness to the property? And Chris, I'll actually direct that question to you.
A lot of times people don't reserve the amount of resources that it takes. God forbid an issue happens. You know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, this, nothing's going to happen. I'm going to take as much cash. And, you know, what I'll say is if there is an issue to happen or something's going to happen, it always does. And it always happens at the time when you're lease ready or you're not as liquid. So I think one of the biggest mistakes that, you know, novice real estate owners make is not reserving enough cash for when something happens, whether it's a roof, whether it's, you know, an electrical issue, or if you blow a hot water heater. Things happen in real estate. You're dealing with property, and you're dealing with people that are renting from the property. So, you know, it's a lot more intense than, let's say, you know, managing your own home.
I mean, really, you look at all the facets that go into properly managing a building, right? First of all, you got to collect rent. So if you're the chief cook and bottle washer and you're doing all these functions, you're sitting there sending off letters, collecting rent from your guys. Then you're managing the day-to-day. You're taking phone calls. Somebody's got to lease the property as well. Somebody's got to be there from a physical standpoint, like an engineer, to make sure that all the operating systems are in line. Then you have to have a project manager who oversees all the contractors and the third-party guys that go out to the property. So if you want to sign up for a job, I think it's a good idea to buy a piece of real estate and, you know, sit there and run everything that goes into it. If you're somebody that's looking to invest, you really need to either have a staff of people that works for you or a team that works for you to do it correctly, and especially if you want to do more than one deal. You know, you might be able to handle one deal, but then how are you out looking for other deals, which is a, you know, huge thing is from the acquisition standpoint, trying to find new deal flow. And you can't do it if you're running, you know, a property day to day.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. And you mentioned with the multiple facets of it, the different people that could get involved, property managers, leasing people, maintenance guys. How much importance or stress do you put on putting the right people in place in these type of situations? I mean, could you be a first-time real estate guy and do that kind of stuff on your own? Or
I think people also underestimate the staff and the talent that you need to correctly run a piece of commercial real estate. I think because there's so many people that call themselves a property manager, a would-be investor thinks he's just going to buy a building and it's going to kind of run himself. A great team of people can successfully run or make a good deal out of a bad piece of real estate. If you have a great piece of, I'd rather have a good team almost than a great piece of real estate sometimes. You know, some sites lease themselves or in the best corners, or, you know, they're in a hot market and there's economic factors that are coming into play. But having a great team or being talented and knowing exactly what you're doing, you really can't shortchange that. I mean, it's a huge part of the business. And there's another point I want to bring up, and then Chris, if you want to elaborate on that. I think the biggest reason why being in the business full-time or leveraging or investing with somebody who's running a real estate portfolio or an investment business full-time is really what I just touched on, which is the acquisition front. If you're a part-time guy, you're not out there bidding all day long on properties. You get $1 million, you build up over a year or whatever, now you're going to go out and start looking. The beauty of being in the business full-time is that you're in full-time acquisition mode. You're constantly making offers, you're constantly networking, you're talking to brokers, you're talking to owners. When you're a part-time guy and you say, oh, guess what, now I got some cash, it's time to go buy, or, you know, Mr. Jones wants to go in partnership with me, let's go look for a deal, you're not going to find the right opportunities because you're not out there pounding the pavement full-time. And it's not to say guys that don't do as many acquisitions as, say, us or other companies can't be successful, but when you're in the marketplace, you understand exactly what's going on, you're making the maximum amount of offers, and that's really giving you a chance to make money on the buy. When you're a part-time guy, you're not going to have those same type of opportunities.
Great point, and I think you hit the nail on the head, because when you're not in it full-time, you don't really understand truly where values are, right? And if you're getting the best price for something and really have an understanding of where the cap rates are trending for different product types. So,
well, think about it, Dan. If you're in a business and you have 100 employees, or you're a dentist and you're working all day long, yeah, you might be able to log on to LoopNet a little bit and see what cap rates are and what's trending. But how are you really going to be able to go after? How are you going to be able to write offers? How are you going to be able to write 30, 40 offers and ultimately find something that makes sense? When you're doing something else, it's impossible to do. It's impossible for Chris and I to run acquisitions. And we have, you know, if we personally want to, we have to have a staff and a crew of guys in our office just to do acquisitions. So each facet is a full-time job, from the management, the acquisitions, the leasing, the accounting, all that stuff. But go ahead, Chris.
So what's funny is, and I'll share this with you, one of my real estate mentors, when I got in the business almost 20 years ago, said something profound. I'm going to share it with you. He said, getting involved in a piece of real estate is like raising a child. You need a village. And, you know, if you hear everything that Tony is talking about and what Dan is saying, it all comes down to time. Most professionals lack the time to source a deal, lack the time to manage a deal, lack the time to correct any issues that go on with a deal. And another big one that we're not talking about is a lot of these third-party vendors. If you're not watching everything they do, the guy that does the tile work, the plumber, the electrician, you'd be surprised at how they try to, you know, bake in certain fees. So if you don't know what you're looking at, it can be a big cost to remedy problems that you have, because you don't even know what you're looking for. So, you know, I think that's why a lot of the professionals who are dedicating themselves to their business, you like to work and invest through companies that are professional, because overall they're able to make more return than flopping on their face and getting through all the mistakes that they make. And it starts with even finding the right type of deal. It takes a lot of time.
So where do you start then? I mean, you buy a property, you have it now. Where does your focus immediately go towards? What is the first thing that you're looking to do, you know, or the first, you know, people, the first group you're looking to hire? What's on the level of importance? I mean, what are you looking at?
I mean, I think you bring together a problem to the table that a lot of entrepreneurs face, not just in our business. What do you do first? What comes first, the chicken or the egg? You know, you go out and you buy a building, let's say for $1 million. Obviously, you can't support a full-time staff. You can't have an accountant. You can't have an asset manager. You can't have all these people that go into it. So, you know, until you have a point of critical mass, it's actually very difficult to try and figure it out. I mean, you're operating on a shoestring almost. And that's why Chris and I are huge fans of doing big deals. You know, the bigger the deal you do, the easier it is to leverage you off of people because the numbers are built into the margins to be able to support all the key players in the real estate cycle and what goes into managing it. So to answer your question, I mean, there really isn't anything first you got to do. And when you buy any piece of real estate, whether it's a two-family house or whether it's a 5 million square foot industrial complex, you got to have a physical guy. You got to have a day-to-day property manager. Somebody's got to lease the building or lease the space, obviously, right? You got to have somebody from an accounting standpoint making sure that, you know, all the billing is up to code and stuff. So where do you start? I can't answer the question. I wish if you could start with a $250 million or even a $50 million portfolio that supported having somebody,
of course.
You know, that's what I would say to do. Yeah. I would say, to be honest, I would advise, you know, I'm not trying to discourage people from getting into the business, but knowing what I know now, you know, my first deal wouldn't have been $1 million mixed use building. It would have been, you know, $15 or $20 million deal at least.
Now I'm I guess you could say slightly pessimistic about a lot of things. Maybe I'm a glasses half empty type of guy. One of the first things that I look at is from a financial standpoint, how can I lose on a deal? And from there, I work backwards and say, okay, how can we do well? And then it goes into location, you know, what type of vision are we going to have for this area, let's say over a 30-year period, whether it's a $200 million deal or $200,000 deal. I think those are the first things that you look at, you know, what type of mistakes, because while looking at those mistakes, you can find opportunities.
I love that. So you're basically, when you look at a deal, that the first thing you're asking yourself, okay, where, how can I lose in this deal? Basically, right? You're not looking at the upside components of the deal or the good aspects to it, right? You're looking at the negative components.
Of course, because then I can know what I need to do to get myself to a profitable position. And it's just, you know, I'm going to give you another phrase that I learned from one of my mentors. Sometimes, at all times, excuse me, the juice has to be worth the squeeze. So if a few minor things happen and I can no longer be profitable, whether it's physical or a tenant leaving, you know, a lot of times I wouldn't do the deal personally. That's why, you know, now certain other people, they make a business out of it. But me personally, that's why I like to stay away from single tenant type deals, because your catalyst is that one tenant. If something happens, you know, you're in a position where you can be compromised quickly versus, let's say, you have 10 tenants with equal, you know, square footage.
I love that mindset because I think a lot of people, they look at deals, they see what they like. And even when they find the negative aspects, they're already convincing themselves why those aren't that big of a deal because, oh, I like XYZ about it, right? So if you look at the negatives first and you weigh, you know, the pros and cons and how you might lose, you know, you're kind of already, you know, hitting those things, you know, before you even go after it. I want to transition to something else, and that's, both of you hit on it a little bit, and that's the management intensity to running these assets. What is involved? What do you, I mean, Tony, I'll start with you and I'll get your opinion. How intensive is the management component to some of these assets?
Great question. And I think that ties in perfectly with, is real estate a business or is it an investment? If you go out and you buy a single tenant drugstore or industrial piece that literally is completely triple net situation, a case could be made that that's more of an investment, so to speak, than say a 300 or 400 unit apartment building, which is, you know, you're in people's homes, people are going to be calling on your phone 24/7. So what goes into each asset is definitely a little bit different, and it all comes down to management intensity. You know, there's a trade-off for everything. You know, when you go out and you get 400 units or you have 400, you get multiple tenants, you trade off some of that risk that Chris was just talking about, because if one guy leaves or a couple guy leaves, it doesn't kill your net operating income. Whereas when you're in a single tenant situation, one guy leaves, now you've lost all your cash flow. That being said, you know, if you're able to get a, you know, a creditworthy tenant on a long-term lease, that thing's going to run itself. It's pretty straightforward. Let's say you get a 100,000-foot industrial facility, and it's a AAA publicly traded type of tenant, and they're going to handle everything involved with it. You basically are going to bring capital to the table, get the thing financed, and it's pretty much going to run itself, you know, for the most part. Now, they could leave, and there could be issues and stuff because it happens all the time, but that's pretty much a turnkey type situation. Whereas on the other side of the fence, let's say you got a 50-unit strip mall with 50 different spaces in there, 50 different tenants, you know, there's going to be a little bit of intensity to that. So each asset has its pros, each asset has its cons. pretty much a rule of thumb, I would say, is when you're dealing with people's houses or where they live, where they're in the unit all day long, you're going to be dealing with more management intensity. The more tenants you have, you're going to be dealing with more management intensity. The older the building you're dealing with, you're going to have more of a physical focus on that property, which is why sometimes buying old buildings, they might look like they make sense, but when you get into the deal, there's a lot of physical issues ongoing with it, unless you're doing a full rehab. So, you know, management intensity plays a huge, huge role into the deal, and it ultimately determines how involved you, your staff need to be, and what makes it an investment versus a business.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. You know, a lot of the triple net deals, if you can buy it at a long term, you know, with a long term lease in a very desirable area, they are attractive for certain investments. Investors, and that could be considered, an investment and more turnkey. But when you buy those types of properties, you're trading out that safety for return, and sometimes the returns are so low on these deals, which we all see on LoopNet, that you're almost better off getting involved with, let's say, a publicly traded REIT or some type of publicly traded security where you can get in and out, especially if you're going to try to make, 7%.
And I think that management intensity that we're talking about is built into those, is built into the pricing of these single tenant deals, because, you go buy, a fast food out on a pad site and it's subdivided off, and you're going to go out and you're going to buy it at a 4.5 or a 5 cap, it's a McDonald's or whatever. The person buying that, and guys are bidding on these net lease deals all across the world, because what are they buying? They're not so much buying a piece of real estate, they're really buying an income stream. They know that McDonald's has great credit if it's corporately backed, and that they're going to get their rent, 2 weeks early like clockwork. So that's why not only are you buying the credit, but you're also buying the management intensity. It's literally an income stream. Whereas when we talk about multi-tenant deals, much more management goes into it. You have to have more of a team, where when you can just kind of get away with it, when you're buying a restaurant or a bank or, a drugstore or a single-tenant industrial piece.
And these single-tenant deals, what I've seen through my analysis is a lot of these deals they sell to 1031 traders, guys that have money that they're going to get a big tax on that they have to roll over in a time constraint, and making 4 or 5% is a heck of a lot better than paying capital tax on their entire investment from 20 years ago. So,
great point.
That's kind of what we see right now.
Yeah, that is a good point, Chris. So, and just to even further elaborate on that, so you don't have as much wiggle room in terms of price, right? Because when you're dealing with 1031 exchange buyers who need to place capital because, they're looking at a large capital gain hit, you have multiple buyers at the table because you have multiple guys in 1031s, and they're gonna eventually, most of them will pay top dollar, because if they don't, they're going to have to pay the tax, right?
And you have more liquidity, so to speak. And when I say liquidity, I mean you have more buyers in the marketplace. There's more of a market for a triple net Walgreens because your pool of people, they understand that there's real estate risk taken off the table because Walgreens is the tenant. They're buying that credit. They're buying that triple. They're buying the triple net structure. They're buying an income stream. Whereas when you look at multi-tenanted pieces, there's a little bit more real estate risk that goes into the actual deal, if that makes sense to you guys.
Yeah, but right now, where we are in this specific environment, there are so many traders that are getting out of other deals that they feel that have reached their peak and they're going to get their majority out, that a lot of these single tenants, let's call them the McDonald's of the world, the Walgreens of the world, the CVS's, the cap rates are so compressed mainly because there's such competition in there.
So, I mean, kind of tying in what we're talking about here, I want to throw a point out there. I think when you're getting into the business, because you asked me this earlier, Dan, and I didn't really give a good answer, you have to make a determination. Are you a real estate entrepreneur, or are you a real estate investor? I think it's two different things. In my opinion, a real estate investor is the guy who's looking to put capital to work inside the real estate space. If you're an entrepreneur, you want to build a team, you want to build a portfolio, you want to grow up and grow an operation. I think that they're two completely different real things. One you're signing up to be in business. One, you just want to get exposure to the asset class. If you're a guy who's an investor who sees the merits of investing in commercial real estate, which we all are bulls behind, I think that working, either buying a non-traded REIT or a traded REIT, or investing with a private equity sponsor, kind of like our firm, or there's a lot of great sponsors out there, I think is the right thing for guys that are investors and they want exposure to the asset class, but they don't want to sign up for toilets, trash, and tenants. They just want to get their quarterly distribution. They want to take advantage of a great management team that a sponsor might have, and great deals that have been sourced by that sponsor.
Yeah, I love that perspective. Because when you think about it, right, your average guy, would you invest into a dental practice if you were the had to be the guy who ran the practice, having never done anything in that space before, right?
That's a phenomenal point.
So yeah, I think
that's the issue, is that people look at real estate like it's different than that dental practice or buying that staffing company or the insurance firm or that manufacturing business. For some reason, we've been conditioned to believe that real estate is an investment and not an ongoing concern, an ongoing business, when it couldn't be further from the truth. In my opinion, an investment is where you put money to work and you literally, your capital does the heavy lifting for you. If I go and I buy and I go and I got money in a savings account, I'm making 2% a year. That's an investment. I'm just sitting there and I'm getting interest on my money, right? When you're actually out there pounding the pavement, even if you're overseeing the manager, you're managing the manager, or if you're overseeing an accountant, you're still in business whether you like it or not. So I think, and look, there's an art to managing your investments as well, but that's another day. So the real estate is a full-time job. Real estate is a full-time business, and if you want to do it right, you either need to staff of people or you need to leverage off of somebody else or another sponsor or REIT staff of people.
Not to put you guys on the spot, but I'd be curious to know if you could think of something quickly. Is there a mistake that you made earlier on in your career that stands out to you that maybe was that one thing that you learned from, and ever since then you've been a better operator because of it? Or
yeah, I'll tell you what it is. I'll tell you one thing. You never want to do something halfway. You never want to cut a corner. You try to save a few dollars, you try to do the quick fix, and a little bit of time elapses, and then you end up paying three times as much than you originally have done. So I would say in anything you do, whether it's sourcing a property, fixing a roof, choosing the right tenants, make sure you don't try to cut any corners, because eventually you'll be paying.
I'm rattling my brain here as Chris is talking, and I think that one that just kind of jumped in is really important, and it's changed as we've done bigger deals, more sophisticated, larger deals, more sophisticated financing, is speaking to the full-time nature of what goes into real estate from a due diligence and an operational standpoint. These leases, what goes into somebody's leases? When you have a major powerhouse tenant that has a 200-page lease, if you're one guy hanging out in an office and you're in a dental business and you're going to go out and buy buildings where there's these major leases, I mean, you got to be able to comb through these things. And it doesn't just mean hiring a law firm and getting banged on your head. You got to be able to do it cost effectively, run through these things, abstract them, understand the key points, because there's so many gotchas, there's so many clauses in these leases. We have a guy full-time on the operations team. That's all he does is review leases when we're going into it. He's not doing the physical due diligence. He's not doing the tenant interviews. He's not doing everything else, the financial due diligence. All he's doing is combing through leases. So I think, you know, elaborating on Chris's point about cutting corners and just real estate being a full-time business, that's just one aspect that I think that, you know, you gotta be diligent when you're going after these buildings, that you're understanding exactly what you're buying, and the leases are huge.
And the other thing I want to say is that when you're literally in the due diligence process and you're getting ready to buy a property, one of the biggest mistakes I see for the guys, and again, it goes to cutting corners, especially for the smaller properties, is they don't hire professionals to go look at their property and do a property condition assessment, where they don't look at the roof, they don't look at the foundation, they don't see if there's any asbestos or environmental issues. And then we see guys, money go hard or something happens, and now they're buying a building, let's say for $500,000, $600,000, $1 million, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden the issues that they have are half of that price to remedy it, because they don't want to spend the $2,000 to send a professional out there to make sure that everything was in good working order. That's a big mistake that any investor, any private equity company should make sure that they do, is know that exactly what it is they're buying and hire the professionals out there to do the work.
And I think that ties into staff as well, because when you're hiring people to run your portfolio, whether it's an accountant, whether it's an asset manager, whether it's a leasing guy, an operational guy, a property manager, you got to hire great people. You know, that goes without saying. And a talented group, a talented group of people can take a mediocre property to unbelievable heights. You could buy the best property in the world. If you got a bunch of idiots working it and running it, you got a chance of screwing up. So it's not just about cutting corners when you're doing a physical report or when you're looking through leases or hiring a licensed contractor versus, you know, Joe Blow in the van. You know, you ultimately have to hire great people. And that's any business. I mean, it's a cliche thing to say, but it's the honest to God truth, because You think about it, accounting I've seen over the years, another mistake you see is that you're on a triple net lease, and for some reason in the lease, they're not billing back for a certain portion of snow removal. And ultimately, they go back in and they re-audit the lease, and it was a huge windfall. You know, and we weren't charging, or not us, but the entity wasn't charging. So, you know, you have to be able to have the right people in place to catch stuff like that, because you're dealing with there's a million different elements, a million different things that go wrong. You got to have the right people in place. It's very simple.
Yeah, and I think to even just further elaborate on that and to give an example, right, when you look at sports, you could have the best talent assembled on a team, but if the coaching isn't there, sometimes it doesn't jive, right? A lot of times you got to have a better coach team than a talent team. So a lot of times you'd rather have a lower class building, like to get back to your point, with a great staff behind it running the asset, as opposed to a better property with not as professional or not seasoned people behind it, right, behind the scenes.
You might be able to get away with less seasoned people if your systems and processes are set up
properly. Right.
So if you have A to Z, we do this. If this happens, then this happens. And then if this happens, you do A, B, and C. Right. If you have your systems and processes down to a science, which we like to think that we do, you know, you could bring in somebody entry level and say, okay, and let them kind of handle
that's
themselves
a good point.
They got some smarts. But, you know, for us, and I hate to talk about us, but we want to have a great team. We want to have great properties. It's that simple. We don't want to do middle deals, midway deals with a great team or any type of combination other than great, well-located assets and markets that we think are going to be worth significantly more, and assets are going to be worth significantly more that are appreciating in value, and a great state for people. And I think if you do that, long-term, you'll have success.
So ultimately, when it comes down to it, it sounds like there's a lot that's involved with running real estate, right? It's not just a set it and forget it type of asset. You can't just buy a building and expect it to perform well if you don't know what you're doing.
You're 100% right. It's a full-time business. It's not an investment unless you're ultimately leveraging off of somebody else to do everything except send you your distribution and increase value of the property. And hiring a property manager is a completely different animal than doing high-level asset management, which is really what all of these properties need. Day-to-day property management is important. High-level asset management, from looking at leasing and physical and budgeting and accounting, is the name of the game. And if you don't have the staff, the resources in place to do that for you, you're operating from behind the eight ball, which is why it's very difficult for guys who think that they're investors, not entrepreneurs, they're real estate investors, to be successful without the team in place and to kind of go off as one-man bands.
Yeah, and to that point, you know, when you're a real estate operator, when you're a professional, there's so much that goes into, you know, Tony mentioned asset management, from curb appeal, tenant synergies.
That's a big one.
The square footage breakdown. What type of term are you going to try to go for your leases, whether it's a retail piece or a multifamily?
And I'm glad you brought up leases, because think about what goes into leasing. We have guys that have relationships on a first-name basis with every single potential tenant in our type of product type. So we're full-time building relationships with new potential tenants, building relationships with our current tenants. I mean, that's a full-time job. It really is.
Right, that in itself, right?
That in itself is another thing. So all of these different facets kind of add up, and you got to have the right players in place, but it's a full-time job. It's really that simple. I wouldn't attempt to take on, knowing what I know now, I wouldn't be foolish enough to go into a deal without a team in place.
So you guys brought up a ton of great points, right? The management intensity, you know, that's involved in running the assets, being able to know your lease structures, the language, knowing your tenants and prospective tenants. There's a lot that goes into this. To sum everything up, right, what would be your one piece of advice? You know, there's someone listening now, he's thinking about investing in real estate. Give them one piece of advice, him or her, that they can kind of take with them and maybe, you know, kind of mull around as they're deciding whether or not
Sure.
they want to get into this.
My one piece of advice would be, make a decision right now. What are you? Are you an investor, a real estate investor, or a real estate entrepreneur? Make a decision. Are you somebody that's going to go out there and try to build a huge portfolio or build a team? Whatever your niche, and you might be a guy doing development. I don't know, single family fix and flips. It applies to really all businesses. Are you an investor, or are you an entrepreneur? Are you somebody who's looking to put capital to work, or are you somebody who's looking to build out a whole crew and put something special together? When you're able to ultimately determine which one of those you are, I think you're able to, that's the point in time you can say, okay, here's what we need to do going forward. As far as being an investor is concerned, though, you need to work with a professional company, or you need to work with somebody else who's going to do all the high-level asset management and the acquisitions. If you're looking to put capital to work, by all means, there's nothing wrong with that. But make that decision, leverage you off of somebody who's doing it full-time, because they'll do it right.
And what I would say is that just like anything good in life, you have to put the work in. If you have the time to be able to devote and craft a plan and vet deals and vet vendors and vet, you know, geographical locations on where you want to buy properties, you know, I think that you'd be able to do it. If you don't have the time, figure out a way where you could either partner up with somebody or work with a professional company that can help you, because the reality is this. Real estate, whether you're buying triple net, single tenant deals, or whether you're buying, you know, a 50-unit multifamily, they're all management intensive. You have to be able to devote time. You have to be able to know what you're looking for, and you have to make sure that you don't cut corners. So that would be my only suggestion. Tony, you want to add one last thing?
My last thing in closing is, let's stop looking at real estate like it's an investment. Let's stop looking at it like you're buying a security and you're a passive holder. For whatever reason, pop culture, society has made this determination that real estate is just an investment vehicle, like a stock or a bond or a mutual fund or a savings account in the bank or something else that's more of from a passive standpoint. It is not. I don't know why it got tainted that way. It should not be looked at that way. Make a decision. Either you're an entrepreneur, somebody who wants to operate real estate, or you're an investor who wants to put capital to work, and then you'll be clear. You'll know exactly what you need to do going forward.
Tony, Chris, thank you guys so much for the time. That was episode 3 of The Art of Commercial Real Estate, sponsored to you by First National Realty Partners. Make sure to join us next week for episode 4 of The Art of Commercial Real Estate.